Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Welcome, Moors and Moors Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana El Bay. And this evening, we're going to be dealing with travels around the world. We have Brother Ramses X that will be with us this evening. He's a merchant marine with a top secret clearance. He travels all around the world. And we want to try to get information on what's going on outside the borders of the United States that we don't know about. And the brother's going to be with us in a minute. I see my guest hasn't logged in as of yet. So therefore, what we're going to do is we're going to take a little quick break. But before we do, I'd like to say that we're offering our free articles as usual, the 14th Amendment Exposed Commerce Game and How to Play, as well as the United States of America and its bankruptcies. And the way to access that information is simply to contact me, Tahaka, at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we'll get that to you. Or either you can email me at tahaka53@hotmail.com, and we'll go ahead and I'll rush that to you. We're going to be dealing with the questions such as what is really going on in other parts of the world. The media is not broadcasting. Are there countries that don't take American money? What are some of the beliefs of the other people in other parts of the world that we don't know about? Are there actual pirate ships on the high seas and operating? And if so, how are we dealing with that? What about real terrorist attacks and where are they happening? What is it that our government don't want the masses to know? And what about the CIA role in the whole thing? What is the difference between women in the United States and women in other parts of the world? And that, the same thing goes for men, but I couldn't add all of the information in at that time. So it goes both ways. But how do other people of the world view people of African descent right here in the United States? What about the education of other countries opposed to what we have here in the United States? These are just some of the questions that we're going to deal with this evening. So you all just sit tight, and we'll be right back, and we'll go ahead on and proceed with this broadcast, give my guests a chance to log on in. I see it's flagged, and we'll get on and get started with this thing, okay? Don't forget, we created one of the most awesome libraries inside the United States, and to access those archives, you simply contact me, Tahaka Monterey Bay, at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'll get you in there, give you your username and password. Not only that, we guide you to what it is you're trying to accomplish, and I act as a final, we'll say, grader on your work before you do anything or file anything anywhere. You send it to me. Let me take a look at it, make sure it's right, and then we get the job done. So you're not left out hanging to dry with this all on your own. We work with you and make sure that whatever it is you're trying to accomplish, if you're dealing with your mortgage company, we take you through that thing step by step. If you got a ticket out there on the streets, or if you're trying to do your estate, or if you're trying to do your last will and testament, we guide you through the whole process and many, many other things. As far as your education is concerned, there's tons of information there for you. If your children have school projects, that information is available. You can print off materials that you need to take in any situation. We got it in PDF format. We got it in Microsoft Word. We got it on video. You name it. It's there in Tahaka's archive. So to access that is simply by contacting me, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, at area code 904-303-9061. And please call me before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we get you in there. As far as your social sites is concerned, I stay banned from there because of the information that we're posting. And but the way to get access to my wall, Tahaka's Institute, Tahaka's New Moorish American Group, Tahaka's Moorish American Group, just send me a friend request right there on Facebook. Make it out to Tahaka Amana L. Bay. That's T-A-R-A-H-A-K-A, and then Amana, A-M-A-A-N-A, and then L. Bay, E-L, and then B-E-Y. And we'll get you in there so you can have access to that information, okay? Now, we'll be right back in just a moment, so just hold on for about 4 minutes, and we'll get you in there, okay?
Hey, lady,
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, it appears that our guests haven't shown up as yet, but we're going to go on and continue because we don't have any choice. This thing is set. We've already discussed this with the brother, and the brother had agreed to be here, but we're going to give him a little bit more time to show up. But anyway, I want to make the announcement that we're going to be holding the Moorish Summit here in Jacksonville, Florida, on the January the 12th, right down here at Masjid El Salam's bookstore, 1625 North Pearl Street. And for information on you guys being here, there's not going to be any ticket price for that. We got Moors that have confirmed that they'll be here all over the United States. It's going to be an economic summit, showing you how to get into position, ways of making money, and many, many other things. We're going to be teaching this. This is a workshop program that will be going on here in Jacksonville, Florida. So if you're in the city, if you would like to come to the city to take advantage of the program, just give me a call to Haka Manael Bay at 904-303-9061, and we'll get you in there, give you direction to get here, or whatever it is that you need to know. We'll make sure that you have that information. That's on January the 12th, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. That's the Summit of the Moors, and that's when we will have a workshop. So that you will be able to get some things under your belt. There's some expert teachers that will be here. They will have all the information that you'll need to know, and they will have printed materials for you to take and use as well. We're going to do our best to deal with everybody in a way where they can actually walk away from this thing with something that they can use. It doesn't cost you anything to get into that summit. And you just simply contact us in regards to that by calling me at 904-303-9061. Now, my brother, he still hasn't shown up yet, and the entire switchboard is lit up. We're waiting on him to call in and follow the props on his phone, speak to the host, just press 1, and he can come on in and we can get this thing started. But in the meantime, we're going to switch and do something else and give him a chance to get in. I have some plugs here, so we're going to start with those, and that'll give him a chance to get in so we can get this thing started. Okay, so you all sit tight.
Would you carry like that? Would you live the life that you have lived if you knew you were something else other than who you thought you were? No. 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 I'm not going to give you that much credit. No. So let's be who they say you are. They said on your birth certificate, I was born in 42. So I lived through all of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I come through the color part, the Negro part, and if you call us black at that time, them were fighting words.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That was in the early 50s. Then Jan Brown came along, let the brother say, got proud and stuff. Oh boy, here we go. Okay? And every 10 years, we've been changing names ever since then.
That's right. That's right.
Okay? That's too many names for one nation to be, when every time when a tiger yesterday is a tiger today. And I'm their daddy, too. Now pick another people. Okay? And don't be leading on these Indian tribes. Leave them alone. Leave your children. We, the ancient one, we are the mothers and fathers of the entire human family. Every nation on earth, including the Chinese and Japanese, they owe their debt to you.
Right.
If you don't believe me, ask them.
Mm-hmm.
Ask them. We just talked to one of the greatest martial artists, a couple of them here, the Haka Bay, our grandmothers. Ask them.
Mm-hmm.
They will travel the world, but I'll ask them. Talk to any Japanese, who your daddy?
Who your daddy?
So what you have to do, you've got to get rid of those things that have been burying you.
That's right.
Okay? Because here, your freedom is here. You have a weapon of mass destruction above the neck.
Mm.
You got to use it. You got to start thinking for yourself, all right? And especially your brother, get you, look, that book, get you that, get you some book, anything that's got Moorish on it, get it. Okay? At least start with your own people. Because ain't nobody else going to tell you. Okay? That's why I put on the flyer. Look, you, all the universities you've been to, P.S. number so-and-so, said you know, you have not been to no school in the United States that taught you about you.
That's right. That's right.
Not one.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So where else can you get it from but your own? It takes a chicken to teach a chicken how to be a chicken. Now, you can add all the science you want to that, it's still going to come out the same thing. It takes a Morris American to teach a Morris American how to be a Morris American. Okay? It takes an ancient one to teach you how to be an ancient one. Okay? Do you know within your attributes that you have the power to stop all those other people from thinking?
That's right.
They can't agree on nothing. You can dumb their mind up so bad they can't get the, two of them can't get together and agree on nothing.
That's right.
I'll pull the trigger. I got a submarine. They be down there till they die. Because they can't even remember how to get up. You can stop them from thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Once you're in your own proper status. Okay? Because this is the power that God has. Remember how you were made, how wonderfully you were put together. Okay? Yeah, I know you're gonna. Yeah, I'm God. Don't get crazy. No, see, it's an educated system for you to learn. It don't take long, okay? All you got to do is realize your godly attributes, your divine attributes that you have within you, okay? And it comes out. All right, it's nothing that your mother and father can give you, because that's where you inherited your instability from in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Your parents could not give you your ability. They could not give you a spirit. That's the two nostrils that breathe the breath of life in you. They couldn't give you a spirit nor a soul to think with. They couldn't do that. But they can give you with a body of flesh. That's why you look like them. Okay? But that soul you got, that's yours. Okay? That's all you. And you can walk around that crazy with all you want to. It's still going to be there. You can hump the ground, and you still got to deal with that soul.
That's right.
That's, because that's your garden. That's your garden. You've got to cultivate it with wisdom that's up to you. Now, you can duck here, as long as you're in the flesh, you can run down the streets of Oregon, down the alleys, and duck and dodge all you want to. But once you hit the grave, ain't no hiding place. So you're going to have to solve the same problem there as well as here. So you might as well get your act together now. Okay? It will not go to the grave with you. Now what I'm going to do, because there's so much that, you know, we wanted to go into, I hope y'all invite me back a little later so we can have more time, but maybe 2 or 3 days of it, okay? But look, what I'm going to do, I'm going to open up the floor, and I ain't scared none of you. Just come on. Come on with any question that you may have. You know, yes. Please, if you don't mind, stand up and identify yourself.
My name is Dale. We're talk about the birth certificate.
Mm-hmm.
I recently discovered that original birth certificate will state that your parent race they are Negro. My mom's a Negro. My dad's a Negro. Therefore, I'm a Negro.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, my birth certificate is original.
Mm-hmm.
But the new one I just picked up recently
got a dope code on it.
It doesn't have anything on it.
Right.
What's going on?
The mother's been kicking butt.
Islam during the national channel.
It's been
Islam.
Yes.
People who have questions, please step to the mic. It'd be much easier than everybody could hear.
Oh, excellent idea.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just
thank you.
Press
thank
this
you.
Button right here in the front, and then address your question.
Yeah, good idea. Thank you, Monty.
So
would you repeat the question for the sake of the record?
Okay, the question is that my original birth certificate states that my mom's a Negro, my dad's a Negro, therefore I'm a Negro.
Mm-hmm.
But the one I just got recently doesn't indicate no race.
Okay.
What's up with that?
Okay.
You, share some light on it.
Sure can. No problem. It all started with the Social Security Administration back here maybe about 30 years ago. They started placing the people, the race, according to the number. Okay, it started with the Social Security Administration. Then it went on to DMVs, and then ultimately to the birth certificates. Now, what that means is that they still got it Negro, Black, and Color because they don't know what else to call you. But they got it under code numbers. So what you do is you contact the Bureau of Vital Statistics and find out what system the state of Oregon, let's just say, is used. All of them got a system for their code, like DMV, Department of Motor Vehicle, okay, Social Security, and also the birth certificate. They all got codes. Find out which code. What I mean by code is this. The code tells you what race or nationality that they're identifying you. It's got Black, white, other, et cetera. Okay? Depending upon the state, the code changes with every state. States are like prisons. There ain't no two of them alike. Okay? But each one has a code system. They stop putting it on the birth certificate. As far as your race is concerned, your nationality, what they call nationality. When they found out that Moors was raising so much sand, taking them to court and saying, they stopped it. And right now, I don't think you can get a genuine birth certificate probably any state throughout the United States right now. They stopped maybe a good... They started maybe about 15 years ago, and now, right now, it's about in every state right now.
The other question, so is Black a race?
No. It's a slave. Black is a slave name.
So when a police report comes back and identify my race as Black, is that me?
No.
So
not after the day.
That's my question. Thank you.
Now see another thing, and I'm gonna get your thanks, sister, for stepping up. Another thing about that race thing, let me tell you how important that is. Remember I told you, when it comes to courts of law, they got two things, okay, that you're concerned about. One is status, and that's your true identity. The other one is jurisdiction. So let's forget about the jurisdiction part. Let's concentrate on the status, all right? The courts own you as Negro, colored, and Black according to their law, okay? 14th Amendment. But now that you're a Moorish American, and you're accepting the ancestral lineage of your forefathers, and no one can change you from the descendant nature of your forefathers unless their power extends beyond God, okay? Mm-hmm. So you accepting and you proclaiming your own status, they don't have no jurisdiction over that. Mm-hmm. None. Mm-hmm. Okay? Okay. Yes, sister.
Yeah, I understand that we bought into this de facto relationship through our birth certificate, which is called, I know on my birth certificate, it says it's a bank note.
It says what now?
It's a bank note. At the
you're
very
right.
Bottom, it says bank note.
Okay.
And now I just want a little more understanding through the UCC and through the Joint House Resolution.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, it doesn't appear that I guess it's going to show up. We have a show scheduled for the 26 on the assassination of John F. Kennedy, new information reveal. And what I'm going to do is go ahead and air that show right now. And then we're going to have to switch formation later. But the show must go on, so y'all sit tight. Here's the show.
From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM tonight. Our JFK assassination program. Stand by for that. And here's what's happening. Oh, boy, more Americans will use food stamps to buy their Thanksgiving dinner this year than ever before, according to a new report from a not-for-profit government watchdog group. It's called the Sightlight Foundation. The Food Stamp Challenge, which challenges higher-income families to live as if they are on food stamps, estimates that a person on food stamps has a budget of about $1.25 a meal. In other words, a family on food stamps must buy an entire meal per person for less than the cost of an average cup of coffee. How in the heck do they do that? Hostess Brands must return to a liquidation scenario after mediation with its bakers union failed to avert a shutdown that may eliminate more than 18,000 jobs. The judge overseeing the Twinkie makers' bankruptcy made all that public today. So it looks as if Hostess is going to go down the tubes after all. Militants took their fight with Israel into the heart of the country, exploding a bomb on a public transportation bus in Tel Aviv. The attack is likely to complicate already strained efforts to achieve a ceasefire there. The blast injured 22 people, shook up the Israeli public, and drew immediate condemnation from world leaders. Jerry Corsi, WorldNet Daily with us. Jerry, this thing's not going away. I thought it would, but it's not.
It's not, George. And as we discussed before the election, the tensions in the Middle East were pretty much bound to spill over into violence after the election was over. And right now the question is whether or not the truce will hold.
What would make Hamas get onto a bus, attempt to blow it up, attempt to kill people when they're in the middle of all this stuff?
It really, that was a provocative act, especially to expand the violence merely from firing rockets into Israel, which is frightening enough now that they can reach Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, but also to explode a bus, an act of terrorism, really, especially as the truce was being negotiated, was very provocative. I mean, we've seen Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and President of, or Prime Minister of Egypt, Morsi, really intervene and try to really bring some reason to the situation. Clearly, if Israel involved itself in a land incursion inside the Gaza, we would have a dramatic escalation of the violence. And I'm not certain that that's not going to happen yet in the near future, especially if Hamas continues to fire rockets into Israel.
And, you know, Jerry, we're not hearing much about Iran right now. How come?
Well, and again, George, the rockets that were being fired were manufactured in Iran.
Right, right.
Which means that they had to have been brought in through Egypt, which brings, again, another escalation of the potential for violence in the Middle East, because Iran remains a major force behind the terrorism, also with Hezbollah and Lebanon, supplied by Iran, and the violence continuing in Syria. The Middle East continues to be a tinderbox.
Jerry, you have a happy Thanksgiving with you and your family. Okay,
thank you, George, and the same to your great audience.
Jerry Corsi. Federal law enforcement agencies soon may have their hands tied when it comes to assessing your email and other personal data if a new bill currently making its way through Congress becomes law. Laws governing the privacy of your emails were drafted in the mid-1980s, long before AOL and Gmail, but efforts to update those rules have some fearing the government's fingers will be flipping through their digital mail. Senate Judiciary Committee Chairperson Patrick Leahy has drafted a substitute bill for the Electronics Communications Privacy Act, which was originally written in 1986, long before things like electronic archiving and storage came about. The update, which will be under review next Thursday, modernizes rules for police seeking to obtain private email for investigative purposes. Lauren Weinstein with us as he watches the Internet for us. What do you think of this one, Lauren?
Yeah, it's actually not cut and dried yet. The problem is that at the same time that there are these efforts to update the ECPA, the Electronic Communications Privacy Act, to better control when the government has access to your stored email, because right now it depends on how old it is, it depends on where it's stored, it depends on whether or not you've opened it. There's all these different parameters. There's already pushback on the moves to close those loopholes from various law enforcement agencies and such, who say that the way it is right now isn't lax enough, that they actually want more access to people's email, not less. And it's very hard from the outside right now to know what's going to come through the Senate, because depending on who you talk to about this, Senator Leahy has taken different stances on this. There's different versions of the legislation. There's different drafts. It's still very fluid, and no one really knows what's going to come out. So this is not a situation. For a while there, it looked like this was going to be a really good, you know, we're going to get this cleaned up and we're going to have more privacy on our email kind of situation. And it may still turn out that way, because obviously the controversy over General Petraeus has driven more action on this recently. But this is not a sure thing, and it's quite possible that at the last minute it'll go the other way because there are very powerful interests who want to have more access to our email and not less.
And there's also plans afoot for governments to try to take over the internet, isn't there?
Oh, there's I hate to be the bearer of bad tidings right before a holiday. I mean, everybody, please have a happy Thanksgiving. But in a couple of weeks now, the International Telecommunications Union, the ITU, which is part of the UN, is having some meetings in Dubai, UAE, where, to put it in the simplest terms possible, they basically want the UN to take over the internet. Now, you know I don't cry wolf on any of these issues. But this is something that has, everyone that's worked with the internet for a short period of time, a long period of time, absolutely up in arms, because what the governments want to do, and this is largely being driven through a secret process at the ITU. The ITU has long been setting telecommunication standards and things like that. But it's a secret process, and we're basically learning things by leaks. It's largely being driven by Russia and China, who want to have, instead of the multi-stakeholder model that's been running the internet up till now, they want the national governments to have complete control through the UN in such a way that they could easily impose censorship and other kinds of oppression on the internet. If they succeed in doing that, the internet could turn into a mechanism for suppressing freedom rather than promoting freedom. Now, there is an effort now to make it clear that this is not something that's acceptable to people. Google just opened up a new website that explains what's going on, what people can do about it, and how to fight against this. And I have a link to that I've just put on my vortex.com, V-O-R-T-E-X.com website. It's in red. It says Stop the UN's ITU Takeover of the Internet. And if people are interested in learning about this and what they can do, I'd recommend going there and reading about this, because this has been percolating for a long time, and now it's really a serious situation.
All right. Enjoy Turkey Day, Lauren.
You too, George. Everyone have a good Thanksgiving.
Super. And as you know, we'll have a live program for you on Thanksgiving night. Those of you who spend the Friday following Thanksgiving doing things like spending time with your family or working or volunteering or attempting to construct the world's greatest turkey leftover sandwich, Black Friday devotees are a mystery. And estimated, now get this, 147 million Americans plan to go shopping sometime this weekend, according to the National Retail Federation. But we shall see. Of course, they're looking for a great retail season. Let's see if they get it. How muscular you are as a teenager may predict how long you live, at least if you're a man. Swedish experts who tracked more than a million teenage boys for 24 years found that those with low muscle strength, weaker leg and arm muscles, and a limp grip were at increased risk of early death. City of Dallas will mark the 50th anniversary of the assassination of President John F. Kennedy next year with a ceremony featuring the tolling of church bells, a moment of silence, and readings by a Pulitzer Prize-winning historian. The commemoration on November 22, 2013, will take place in Dealey Plaza, where Kennedy's motorcade through downtown Dallas was passing as those shots rang out. The ceremony will begin at 12:25 p.m. with the church bells across the city, followed by a moment of silence at 12:30 p.m., the time of the shooting. I was 13 years old when this all happened a long, long time ago, and always remember Walter Cronkite.
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, some 38 minutes ago. Vice President Lyndon Johnson has left the hospital in Dallas, but we do not know to where he has proceeded. Presumably, he will be taking the oath of office shortly and become the 36th President of the United States.
Cronkite broke down then. He took his glasses off. He was teary-eyed. It was quite a sight to behold. This country probably has never been the same since. The Warren Commission that investigated the president's death concluded that Lee Harvey Oswald fired at Kennedy's motorcade from the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository. They concluded he acted alone. But did he? Up next, Michael Cohen joins us. We'll be talking with him about his work on the JFK assassination next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Two special guests for you tonight as we talk about the JFK assassination. You're going to be involved as well. Each other hour, we're going to take your phone calls. Michael Cohen this hour with us and next as well with your calls, a retired New York City High School social studies teacher. He's been doing research all of his life on different topics, but the Kennedy assassination has been the most important. He was just 20 years old when President Kennedy was assassinated. Michael, welcome to Coast, Michael.
Thank you, George. George, you mind if I ask you a few questions about the Kennedy assassination?
Yeah, you can interview me, and then it's my turn with you. Go ahead.
Okay. It's the 49th year, of course, of his assassination. George, how many books have been published about the Kennedy assassination in the last 49 years?
I would say too many.
Yeah, right. Can you give me a number?
Oh, at least 20, 25, minimum, I'm guessing.
Five books? How about 6,500 books?
Oh, my gosh.
I got that from Amazon.com, by the way.
That's amazing.
Now, how many books do you think have been published about Lee Harvey Oswald in the last 49 years?
Probably the same amount, maybe?
No, 3,500.
Okay, close.
Okay, how many books have been published about the Warren Commission in the last 49 years?
Maybe 1,000?
2,000.
All right.
How many books have been published about LBJ being the prime instigator of the assassination, blaming him? How many books on him, you think?
Maybe 100?
180. Close. Very close.
How am I doing?
Very good. So we're up to about 12,000 books.
I can tell you're a teacher.
Yes, yes. 12,000 books, in my opinion, a totally waste of time, totally useless. People don't know. Even today, people ask what happened, who killed them. 12,000 books, they don't answer the questions. So my whole life, I'm going through this business saying, what is the truth? What really happened in this assassination? And I think I uncovered it, maybe 80% of it. I don't get 100%, but I think I've covered most of it. I could fully document it from New York Times articles, which, by the way, were declared secret by the Warren Commission. A lot of this, believe it or not, a lot of newspaper articles and magazine articles were declared secret, though they don't tell you that. They keep that quiet. We know there's millions of documents out there that are secret. All right, let me tell you how I got involved with the woman who killed Kennedy.
All right.
Remember Madame New, by the way? The
Vietnam.
Dragon Lady?
Vietnam, right?
Yeah, Vietnam. Do you remember? I don't know. I'm older than you, but do you remember the
story? Oh, gosh. I was 15 years old, I think, Michael. Right
okay, around. You don't remember the stories. Okay.
No.
All right. Well, by the way, that's all planned. You're not supposed to remember this. It's all censorship. Since the assassination, her name has been obliterated from the history books. And, you know, they keep people in ignorance about this. But I got to it. I got the information on it. And basically the way I found it was I went to the public library. All my work is done in the public library, by the way.
All right.
Stuff is in there. The documents are in there if you know what to look.
So what you're going to tell us tonight are things that you piece together. Is that right?
Right. That's correct. Okay. Basically, it comes from the New York Times, November 1963, about five articles in the New York Times. It's all based on that. And it's based on what this woman did, who she saw, what happened, who she talked to, like you trace a criminal, you know, your forensic test and everything. And the evidence in these documents, as far as concerned, I think is absolute, that this woman, Madame New, she came from Vietnam, instigated this plot basically all by herself, in a plot that involved most of the government officials involved, different agencies and everything, and the end result was the death of President Kennedy. She did this all in 20 days. I don't think James Bond in any movie could do what this woman did.
No, I don't think so either.
It could do something like this by herself. And I'll go into some details about this. 20 years of age, I was in college, I heard about Kennedy's death. My generation was greatly affected by it. Well, your generation too.
Mine too.
Okay, we never recovered from it. Over the years, I started buying books, conspiracy books that were coming out. I call it the JFK assassination industry. They keep pumping out these books every few weeks. Okay, so I'm reading these books as the years go by, and I see something's wrong with these books. It doesn't make sense. And what doesn't make sense is that I remember before Kennedy was killed, there were reports in the news about a woman, a very angry woman, who wanted to kill the President of the United States. And I couldn't remember a name, though. This is like 10 years afterwards or 15 years afterwards. Mm-hmm. So one day I'm in the public library doing some work for my school, and I see the microfilm section. I said, hey, what do I got to lose? Pull November 1963 out of that, the film on that. By the way, you can't do this on a computer today. Even with all our advances, the microfilm is still better. So I took that microfilm out, put it in the machine, and I said, let me see if I could find that woman, that name of the woman, and what she did. So I started on November 1st, nothing. November 2nd, nothing. November 3rd, I nearly jumped out of my seat. There she was on the front page of the New York Times. Not only one article, five articles about her. And you say, well, why did the New York Times honor her? I guess it's an honor to be on the front page of the New York Times.
Yeah, yeah. Why'd she be on the front page of the New York Times?
The day before, she held a live press conference on television and threatened to murder the President of the United States. That was enough to... Yeah.
Was she in Vietnam at the time, South Vietnam?
No. She was here. If she was in Vietnam, she would have been killed. Kennedy ordered her death.
She held a news conference, threatened to kill the president, and was never arrested for this?
Oh, that, not only never arrested, well, they erased her memory. Oh, yeah. That's correct. A matter of fact, the Warren Commission labeled her as a suspect for what she did on this news conference. But that was kept secret for 30 years. Her name doesn't appear in the 26 volumes. It only came out in 1993 after a few thousand pages were released. Remember after the Oliver Stone movie came out?
Right, I remember that.
So
yeah.
There was a lot of complaints about all these millions of documents. So they released a whole about a few thousand documents. And then, of course, the media at the time said, oh, look, there's no conspiracy here. But they lied because they accidentally released her file. We didn't know she had a file with the Warren Commission. And you can look it up, by the way, on the Internet. You look up John F. Kennedy assassination records on Google, and you'll get to the National Archives and put her name in there. You'll see the stuff. The problem with her file was it was censored. There was only 10 items in the file. And, oh, by the way, in the file it says she's a suspect. Actually says that.
I've never. This is an amazing revelation to
me. I'm telling you. It's amazing. Because the assassination industry cannot report this. They're under orders not to talk about this. That's why, to you, it's amazing. To me, I got this stuff out. I could document all this. It's very easy to document this stuff. All right, now, in the file, there were 10 items. None of the newspaper articles I talked about were in that file. There were hundreds of articles on this woman. None of it was in there. All it was sketchy reports, some seaman in Turkey heard from somebody Madam New killed him or something, some stupid things like that.
Well, explain this to us, Michael. Who was she exactly?
Okay, Madam New, yeah, I was going to get to that whole business. Madam New ran South Vietnam along with her husband, President Diem, and his brother-in-law, Nu.
Ah.
The three of them ran South Vietnam. South Vietnam was always a big problem for us, especially in the early 60s. And what happened was you had a Catholic minority, 10% of the population, sitting on top of 90% who were Buddhists and mistreating them all the time.
Right.
And there was always problems with that situation. So she was the leader. The husband was the president. She was the first lady, but she dominated everything. She was in control of the situation. Eventually, that power led to a conflict with President Kennedy, and in the end, President Kennedy paid the price. This was a woman you did not cross. She was a tough woman, a strong woman, a combat veteran. In Vietnam, she was always under the gun. She had an army of 25,000 women soldiers protecting her. Just tell you what's going on. She didn't trust anybody, even her own army. In her obituary, I found one thing just recently. It never ends.
Hold on for a second, Michael. We're going to hit this quick break, and we're going to come right back to you on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. We're with Michael Cohen, who has put together some pieces here of a puzzle that I did not see before. Mm-hmm. This is fascinating work, Michael.
Okay. By the way, if you Google Madam New's name, you'll see a number of articles on her. There's a Wikipedia article on her that's pretty accurate. Doesn't tell the whole story. And also, the New York Times, when she died last year, did a big obituary on her. That's worthwhile to read, too. I was getting back to
and
her
she spells
personality.
It N-H-U, right? Her last name?
Yeah, yeah. Madam, M-A-D-A-M-E-N-H-U.
Okay.
Yeah, Google that. You'll see Wikipedia, and then you'll see the New York Times obituary, along with all the other obituaries.
Okay.
Anyway, let me get back to her personality. See what's, you know, she was no Marilyn Monroe. Let's put it like this, you know. she was a tough cookie, according to what I've read about her. For example, one of her generals, when she was running South Vietnam, threatened to kill her husband and make her his mistress. So she heard about this, and one day she's at a party, and that general was at the party. So she goes up to the general and says to him, if you try this, I will personally rip your throat out.
Jeez.
This is what she told the general, and that, well, no more problem with that general. I'm just trying to explain what Kennedy was up to. In the summer of 1963, 4 months before Kennedy died, Kennedy and her got into a death struggle, a struggle for power and control that could only end in the death of one of these people, and it ended in the death of Kennedy. Let me just give a little background of what happened. We had 30,000 troops fighting in Vietnam at the time. They were dying, being wounded, although we didn't call it a war. It was costing us $1 billion a week to run this thing, to save that governance. Half the government there was in danger of collapsing. The communists were, Viet Cong were getting more powerful. And the Madam Nu came up with an idea, but I think it might have came from the Vatican because she was Catholic. And her plan was she got to convert the 90% of the Buddhists to the Catholic religion. And the way to do it is you burn down their temples and kill off their monks. Simple process. Then the Buddhists would have to convert and become, you know, Catholics.
Okay.
So she started this program. And when it started, President Kennedy got very nervous about this because the United Nations started getting involved with this business. You know, say, what's going on here with the Buddhists here in South Vietnam?
It's almost like genocide, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. By the way, her own father said that she was totally insane. This is her father. She was born a Buddhist, and she converted to the Catholic religion. Her father was a Buddhist, yet she turned on the Buddhists and murdered them by the thousands. Anyway, so the Buddhists at this point, you know, wanted to protest. The way they protested is, you may have remembered this, they burned themselves in the streets of Saigon, the monks. They poured gasoline over themselves.
That's right. They would sit down and burn themselves. That's right.
Do you remember those pictures? I don't know if you remember it.
I sure do. I'll never forget them.
Right. So they, you know, they had photographers there taking pictures. These pictures went all over the world. Kennedy is getting nervous now. He's really upset, you know, what's going on with this family and what Madam Du was doing. So he starts threatening them, and he says, you got to stop this. Madam Du says, Mr. President, you cannot tell me anything. This is an independent country. I could do what I want. As the monks were burning themselves, she started making wild statements. She said these burnings, she called them barbecues, and she made statements like, the next time a monk wants to barbecue himself, I'll bring the mustard.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, this went all over the world. These statements from a ruler of a country, this is unbelievable. Even the Ayatollah Khomeini, you know, couldn't match this stuff. So a couple more statements were, the next time a monk burns himself, I'll bring the gasoline and the matches. Or the next time a monk burns himself, I'll be clapping my hands. Kennedy went nuts, and he threatened her. And he says, shut your mouth. We don't need this. This is going all over the world. You're embarrassing us. America's fighting here, trying to save your government. And again, she says to Mr. Kennedy, I don't have to take orders from you. We are the legitimate government here in South Vietnam. 10% of the population, you know, is the legitimate government.
Well, where's her husband at the time, DM?
The husband kept his mouth shut. She did all the work. He was in the background.
He's the president, but
he's the president, DM, yes. He's the background. She did all the work. She's out front doing all the work. Okay, so he talks to her, not to the other two. Anyway, summer goes on. Summer 1963 goes on. This back and forth arguments with Kennedy and her. I call it a death struggle. In the end, one of them dies. Finally, towards the end of August, Kennedy says to her, a Donald Trump thing, you know, Donald Trump, you're fired. He said to her, I got bad news for you, you three. You're out. Goodbye. Pack your bags. You're no longer the rulers here. Madam Nu shot back to him and said, you can't talk to me like that. I run this country.
Well, she was right, wasn't she?
Well, yes and no, because she had a dictatorship. It wasn't a democracy.
No.
And the voting was all fixed. You know, they never had an actual vote. It was all a joke. You know, it was a dictatorship, a Catholic-run dictatorship, by the way.
Well, that Diem got assassinated. Her husband got assassinated.
We're getting to that. I'm getting to that. All right. Before I get there, I just want to give a few more facts. Yes, in the end, Kennedy ordered a coup through the CIA, and what happened was her husband and her and his brother knew. Had their hands tied behind their backs. They were forced to kneel, and both of them were shot in the back of the head with rifles.
Yes, it does. Is it true that Kennedy was shocked that they were murdered? I think, did he want them just out of the country?
Well, you see, that part I couldn't really prove. You know, we get all kinds of misinformation after that. My feeling was Kennedy wanted to kill Madame New. You see, those two. He wanted to get her, but luckily, she was in America at the time on tour. He couldn't get her, so he got the other two. I think if she was there, maybe they just would have killed her, and the other two, they just would have said goodbye, you know?
Right.
That's my feeling about it.
Okay.
But she was the enemy. He hated her, and she hated him. Anyway, so in October of that year, she comes to America on tour. Now, at that point, she becomes a hero to the right wing in this country, the billionaire right wing. You know, you hear that today, the conservatives. Richard Nixon, they loved her. The Catholic Church loved this woman, and they hated Kennedy, who's the liberal, who's a communist, or whatever. So she felt that if she comes to America and tours, she could get enough support among the American people to fight Kennedy, you know, make him change his plans.
Okay, and Kennedy must have been livid that she was here doing what she was doing.
Oh, he thought he could stop her by denying her an entry visa, but there was too many complaints. There was pressure put on. She had a lot of support in the government. I mean, this woman, like today, you know, some of these right-wing people, they worship this woman. She was out there fighting communism. This was a big thing in the Cold War.
It was huge. Huge then. Yep.
Yeah, right. Okay. So anyway, a month goes by. She has tremendous interviews. If you go to Amazon.com, you'll see pictures of her. Life magazine, Time magazine, Newsweek, all had front-page covers on her. She's a very beautiful woman, by the way, at that time. And she had press conferences all the time. Where they meet the press, with reporters, and each time she denounced Kennedy and said he cannot do what he's doing to my country. This is ridiculous. Comes November 1st, and the assassination of her relatives take place. Now the fun begins, all right? The Kennedy administration said that they committed suicide. See what I said?
Oh, with their hands tied behind.
Yeah. Even Houdini would have a problem, I think, doing that, right? Yeah. Anyway, so Madam New holds a press conference. And in this press conference, what she was saying in this was not she was going to threaten to kill the president. That's already been decided. So she's going to make him pay.
Did she have money, Michael? Was she a wealthy lady?
Billionaire.
Okay.
That's why she was able to pull off this conspiracy within the government to pay off. Yes, unlimited amount of funds. That played a big role in the way she things were handled. We have a corrupt government, I hate to say it. Money talks. And she knew that. And, anyway, I'll talk about Richard Nixon in a minute. I just want to talk about this business with this death thing here. It was in the New York Times. The transcript was on November 3rd edition, the third page. And it goes on and on. And, by the way, here, George, I'm going to give you the first sentence of what she said. I want your opinion of it.
Okay.
Whatever is done against Vietnam will be felt in America, too. How do you interpret that sentence?
Well, her husband had been already killed, right?
Right.
To me, then, it would be what you've done here, we're going to do here.
Uh-huh. To who?
I would assume Kennedy.
That's correct.
It sounds like she was talking to Kennedy.
Oh, yes. And she goes on with – she never mentions Kennedy's name in here. She calls it the administration.
Right. She's a smart lady.
Very intelligent. Crazy, but very intelligent and very shrewd politically. She survived 10 years in Vietnam running a crazy country. She knew her stuff. All right. So she issues this death warrant over here, and it says in the Times here. Now, what I did next was I traced articles. There were four other articles on her in that month in the New York Times. And I went from article to article trying to place things together. A key article was a telephone call she got from her friend Richard Nixon. And Richard Nixon, we know among the assassination people, he was there, right? You know the story. You want me to go over that little bit?
No. He was in Dallas, wasn't he?
That yes. One day a year, out of 365 days, he was in Dallas the day Kennedy died.
And he hated Kennedy.
The Warren Commission asked him what he was doing there. Oh, I was on business. But there's another story. He was changing planes. What he was doing there was he was setting up his assassination teams. That's what he was doing. And Mr. E. Howard Hunt, as you know, was on one of those teams there in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, see, one of the problems these assassination books have is they all talk about this, you know. And also years later with E. Howard Hunt with the pictures of him, him at the assassination site. You know, we've been over this a lot. You've
talked
about this.
And his deathbed confession.
Right. Deathbed confession. Now, these assassination books out there all mention that, but they can't go any further because there's a key they're missing. And the key they're missing is his relationship to her. This article proves that she was dealing with him. Now, this is what I think happened. She talked to him on this phone call, maybe on the phone call, and said, look, I want you to arrange the assassination of President Kennedy. I will give you unlimited amount of funds and money. You know where all the bodies are buried in Washington, you know, with these corrupt politicians and agency heads and everything. And you go to it, and she stipulated, though, there were two things that had to be done. The first thing was he had to die on November 22nd at 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Why was that significant?
Well, because she astrology. They went to an astrologer, and astrology played a big role in this. You never heard of this before, did
you? No, you're going to have to tell us that, too.
Oh, that's another story they don't want you to know about with astrology on this. And the other thing she told Nixon to do is he has to be shot in the head for obvious reasons, right? Her husband was killed that way.
Her husband was killed that way.
Yeah. Now, Nixon, I think, knew enough people to put this whole thing together between the CIA, FBI. Well, of course, you had Alan Dulles, who was kicked out of the CIA by Kennedy because of the Bay of Pigs. He hated him. She probably got him involved. He wound up in the Warren Commission to cover himself. And then, of course, J. Edgar Hoover hated him. By the way, J. Edgar Hoover sacrificed one of his agents, Lee Harvey Oswald, in the end. Oswald was an FBI agent. I'll get into that later if you have time to discuss that.
He was the patsy, as he
said. He was the patsy, but he was an FBI agent,
right,
sacrificed by Hoover.
Sure.
So my only problem is I think what happened was he got in touch with Hoover and got in touch with Alan Dulles, and all three of them working together worked out this whole business, you know, in 20 days.
Now, they must have, if they were involved in this, Michael, they must have obviously hated Kennedy so much, they wanted him dead even before she came on the picture, right?
It's no secret Hoover's attitudes or the, Alan Dulles. That's well known, you know, about that. But they needed motivation. They had to have somebody to motivate them, you see? She was the motivation. On their own, they wouldn't do this.
Well, and they needed cash.
And the unlimited funds. Whatever the money took, whatever it was, they paid off. One of the things they set up here, here's another thing they don't want to talk about in the assassination books. President Kennedy's funeral was rehearsed 1 week in advance while he was still alive.
What do you mean it was rehearsed?
Ah, interesting story here. This is in the Warren Commission. I think it's Exhibit 1803. I went through this. I picked up interesting things like this that the other books will not talk about. All right. You saw the pictures of the funeral. You remember the funeral?
Yes.
You had horses, caisson with the coffin on it, marching bands, thousands of soldiers.
Little John there, saluting.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, all of that was rehearsed the week before. Yes, actually rehearsed. His funeral was rehearsed while he was still living. By the way, we just had a great election here, and they spent billions of dollars, you know, trying to fight for the position of president. I don't think the president does such a great job if, as one of the benefits is, they rehearse your funeral in advance.
Well, now, did Kennedy know that they were rehearsing this funeral?
I don't think he did. Well, they covered themselves. They lied. Let me explain what happened with this. I was reading the stuff in the Warren Commission on this, and there was a right-wing professor who was giving testimony before the commission talking about this rehearsal business. He says the collaborators, the conspiracy people, wanted Kennedy to have a great funeral. Something like, remember Ben-Hur or Cleopatra, those movies?
Yeah.
They wanted to hypnotize the public with such a funeral, they wouldn't think of what else was going on in the country, you know, whatever corruption it was. and he gave evidence that a rehearsal did take place. Now, the Warren Commission was in trouble because their only purpose was to prove Lee Harvey Oswald was not a FBI agent.
They were backing into that whole story.
Right. This story blows the whole thing wide open because that means the only way you can rehearse President Kennedy's funeral has to be from the highest levels, and Robert McNamara, defense secretary, is the only one who could have ordered it. That's his friend and buddy, by the way, McNamara at the time. So anyway, they got in touch with the captain who ran the funeral rehearsal, and they asked him, they said, why were you rehearsing President Kennedy's funeral in advance? And he said, no, we weren't doing that. We were rehearsing former President Hoover's expected funeral in advance. Apparently Hoover was sick at the time.
Uh-huh.
And then he says, the captain says, but when Kennedy was killed, we were ready. Everything was set up.
It was the same thing, right?
Yeah, but where they lied, let me explain where the game is on this. The cover story was Hoover's funeral, expected funeral.
Right.
Hoover did not die till a year later. You see, they thought, the Warren Commission thought that would satisfy the people and forget about this funeral rehearsal. But it was there. It actually happened.
Let me tell you, Michael, I don't believe in coincidences. And here you have Diem dying November 1st, 1963.
Oh, yeah, 20 days.
20-some days later, Kennedy dies. I mean, it's just way too close.
No, it's obvious. Oh, it's obvious there's a connection there.
So let's assume she goes to Nixon, who then goes to the folks he knows.
Right.
And they say, look, this woman is giving us a lot of money to get this done, and we need to do it. And so they simply, made a few – so the names that we've always heard, the mob, the Rosellis, the Hunts, all these people, do you think they were indeed players in this thing?
All right, let me explain about the mob, the mafia.
Okay.
On their own, the mafia would never have killed the President of the United States. These books, assassination books, are lying. You know, they try to show you they're having secret conspiracies. These are mafiosos, so to kill the president because of Jimmy Hoffa and all this stuff.
Right, and they want back in
the
Cuba.
The mafia
is
a very patriotic organization. It may be a criminal organization, but they respect the government. They would never do this on their own, except when they're told to be part of this.
Told to be part of it, that's right.
That's right. They are told to participate. That's how they got involved with this. But on their own, these assassination books keep saying that.
Well, and
the mafia, they did it on their – no. They would not have done this.
And they're told to participate, Michael, by those who could make their life miserable if they refused.
Whatever the reasons, yes, whatever happened there. The Catholic Church was involved, too, unfortunately, in this. Madame New went to the Pope and started she used some ideology. I'm talking about the law. This is the law of tyrannicide. T-Y-R-A-N-N-I-C-I-D-E.
Hold on, Michael. We're already at the top of the hour. We've got one more to go with you. We're going to take a few calls, too. But we've got so much material to cover here with you. The astrology, why you say Oswald was an FBI agent. We'll get back to all of this in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And this hour, we're with Michael Cohen. He's sharing his thoughts on who killed JFK, and we'll be back with more in your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Michael Cohen with us. Michael, tell us the role that astrology played in this assassination.
Yeah, I thought you'd find that interesting.
I sure do.
Yeah, because you never heard this before, did you?
No, sir. Not at all.
Oh, yeah. They wouldn't put that in the assassination books. That's off limits, you know. Okay, about 1975, a new book came out about the Kennedy assassination, written by a former agent of the CIA. It was called The Tears of Autumn by Charles McCary. He said this is a novel. It's a fictional account of the Kennedy assassination. So I said, well, you know, there's more truth than fiction. Let me buy the book. Let's see what this guy has to say, right? And what he said was very scary. What he said was this. When the surviving relatives of Diem in South Vietnam heard about the, you know, the assassination of Diem and New, they wanted to kill President Kennedy. He doesn't mention Madame New in this, by the way. He says surviving relatives. What they did was they went to an astrologer in Saigon, which today is Ho Chi Minh City, and they told the astrologer, this is President Kennedy's birthday. Give us a day when we could kill him, and we know it'll work out according to his astrology table. Yeah, you see, we don't think like that here in this country, but in Asia, they think like that. People are dying and murdered by things like this. So this got my interest on this, you know, and I said, wait a minute here, you know. So I started doing research on this, and the more research I did, the worse it got. This is what really happened. All the astrology magazines in the United States predicted Kennedy was in big trouble on November 22nd. They all warned him, Mr. President, be very careful. This is a very dangerous time for you to do anything. That I never know the lineup of the planets, you know, the exact thing, how it worked out. But for months in advance, he was being warned about this.
Well, I remember Gene Dixon warned.
Well, let me tell you, I'm getting to Gene Dixon. Oh, yeah.
All right.
Okay. So let me just tell you about this. So all these magazines were warning him on this stuff. And, of course, after the assassination, all these magazines say, oh, look what we did. Aren't we geniuses? We, you know, we predicted this was going to happen. Now, Jean Dixon gets involved in this. By the way, I don't think your audience knows about Jean Dixon. You know, she died a number of years ago. You want to talk about her background, or should I refer some of the things about her?
You can, and some of the people know about her, of course.
Okay, all right. Jean Dixon was probably one of the greatest psychics or astrologers in American history, next to Edward Casey. From Franklin Roosevelt to Nixon, she gave advice to presidents in the White House. She claims she brought a crystal ball in, and she used to hide it because they're afraid the guards might think it was a bomb or something. And she would give psychic advice, which shows you the caliber of our presidents listening to a woman like this. You know, she might have said during Eisenhower, we better bomb Moscow, and my crystal ball says it's bad news. But I'm just saying they were listening to her and what she had to say. In 1956, she predicted in writing that the president elected in 1960 will be assassinated. Okay. She actually said this in 1956. People in the parapsychology area said, well, it's a 20-year cycle. I don't know if your audience is familiar with the 20-year
cycle. We know that. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So she was using that. That's what they said. She was using that to make that prediction. Okay. 1963 comes along, and around June or May, 4 months before Kennedy's death, she's on the Long John Neville show. You know about, well, we know about Long John Neville, right?
He was the one who started all this.
Thanks to him, right.
I'm here.
That's correct. That's correct. And on the show, she said President Kennedy is going to die this year. Neville, after the show, warned her to keep her mouth shut. She said, don't say things like that on the air.
That's a no-no for radio, you know?
Right. Even then, you know. But that didn't stop her because she kept making predictions for the rest of the year. And she named November 22nd. Apparently, she was using the astrology part, not the psychic area, reading the tables there. And according to her bio, I pulled it off the internet. I don't know how true this is. She kept warning Kennedy right through that fall not to go south. Watch out for November 22nd. It's a dangerous day for you. And even on the morning of that date, she said Kennedy's going to die today. This is in her bio. I don't know how true that part is. But she was on the radio making statements like that, threatening. Of course, she became very famous afterwards after Kennedy died. Her reputation, you know, blew up, and she wrote several books on it and so forth.
I remember Look magazine at the time. Look magazine, or was it Life magazine at the time, Michael, that did a feature on her after the fact?
They all did it. She became very famous. You go to any of these psychic books in the library, parapsychology, you know, she's written up about it. What they don't tell you, though, is that the assassins used that information to kill President Kennedy. See, we think differently than they do in other parts of the world. You could take, you know, it's very dangerous. Somebody has your birth date. Somebody wants to kill you. They could go to an astrologer. Here's your birth date. What's the best day to kill this person?
And then they do.
Or not. It could happen. And it might happen. Maybe it goes on all the time. We don't know.
Who knows?
But it could be a dangerous weapon, astrology. And this is what happened with Kennedy. They used it against him, and in the end, he got killed. Now, I don't know about the stars and the planets having the effect on the assassination, or, you know, it worked well because of that. I'm not too sure about that. But astrology was a factor. Now, why is it banned in the books? I'll tell you why it's banned in the assassination books. Because Madame Nu was a big thing with astrology. She really believed in it. And if you start looking at astrology with the Kennedy test, it's one step to her very quickly. I'll tell you how much she believed in it. She kept her birth date secret. It was a national secret. Yeah, you're laughing about it.
She didn't want, that was one of those laughs where she didn't want anybody to know her birthday because they didn't want anything to happen. She didn't want anything to happen to her.
Correct, that the assassins would use that against her. If you remember, I told you if you look up Google her name, you'll see the New York Times obituary on her last year. If you stand down at the end of that obituary, there's a footnote that the New York Times gave the wrong birth date in the original obituary, the wrong date. She died at 86 or 87, and they said we couldn't find her birth date. We made a mistake, and then they said, well, we figured out it was this date instead. They got him confused because she kept that secret. She didn't want anybody to know that.
Michael, how did she avoid getting prosecuted or tied into the assassination?
Well, when you know people like Richard Nixon, Alan Dulles, maybe Chief Justice Warren, you know. And when you know the big shots, when you have billionaire friends, you know, from Southern California and Texas who are your buddies, when you know the Pope personally, it helps. It helps. And they covered it up afterwards.
And she took it with her to the grave?
Okay, yes. Unfortunately, she took it to the grave. And I think, though, the people in our government, what I found interesting is when she died, every major newspaper last year did obituaries on her. For 47 years, they never mentioned her name in the press. It was all banned. You couldn't talk about it.
She was gone. Yeah, it's like she didn't exist.
Right. But then when she dies, you look at that New York Times obituary. It's 3 pages long. And I think what happened was this. The people in power here were so happy she died because she was a loose cannon. She could shoot her mouth off. Look what happened to Howard Hunt, his deathbed confession. Remember that?
Yeah,
she
sure
could have pulled something like that. I mean, I think they had a sigh of relief, and they said, okay, let's give her a good obituary, good riddance to her. You know, we don't have to worry about her anymore, you know, coming up with names or maybe appearing on your show.
Yeah.
Who knows what she was capable of doing?
I would have interviewed her.
Okay, yeah, you would have been. That's the last thing they wanted, believe me. They didn't want you to interview. You know, that would be very dangerous for them. But they were so happy. So every major newspaper in this country, you scan down that thing, that obituary after obituary, they all were reporting on her, you know, her death. But 47 years, you couldn't talk about it. You couldn't say anything about her, you know, with that business. But that's where the astrology thing came in on that. Now, in 1982, and if you look down Madame New videos, if you Google that, there was a 1982 interview with her for 1 hour, and it was very interesting. She doesn't admit she killed the president in that interview, but she says everything else. And
who interviews her, do you know?
I'm not sure if it was from France or something. She was living in France, or I don't remember the interviewer. But she goes into a lot of interesting topics if you're into history and the Cold War. First of all, she knows she hates America. Oh, my God. She really laces. She calls all the American presidents incompetent and stupid. This is up to 1982. She says America doesn't know what it's doing in foreign policy. We blunder from war to disaster, like the Berlin Wall, like the Cuban Missile Crisis. And she says, America's doomed, she says. Look at the people who are running your country. She actually says this. And now you think about today. Has it changed? Did we blunder into Iraq? Afghanistan, living, we're blundering all over the place. But she said, you got to watch that interview. It's very interesting.
Well, and you know what's interesting? We're going to take some calls here. Then I want to talk with you about the Oswald FBI connection.
Oh, yeah.
Ho Chi Minh, Michael, Ho Chi Minh came to us before we were even involved in Vietnam.
Yeah,
and wanted our assistance, and we turned our back on it.
That's correct. That's correct.
All this could have been avoided.
Well, you know, the communists, were at that point, you know, worried about the communists. He was a communist. And, you know, and also the French wanted us back. They wanted the Catholic Church wanted more control, you know, take over. Vietnam was a very rich country, you know, had rubber plantations, minerals and things. And
sure,
we wanted
yeah.
control over that. So we brushed them aside, you know, Ho Chi Minh.
Let's take some calls here for a while here for you. New Jersey we go, east of the Rockies.
Yes.
Hey, Chuck, go ahead. You're on with Michael Cohen.
Yeah. Hello, George. How are you?
Good, Chuck.
Well, listen, I have listened to the past, I would say, 9 of these specials that Coast to Coast AM has done, okay? And I'll tell you something. First, let me just preface by saying I do not believe that Lee Harvey Oswald was the guilty party at all, okay? He was not the assassin. But what I'm hearing here is a real, real dismissal of history. Kennedy was absolutely undermined by his people on the ground in Vietnam, including Henry Cabot Lodge, who was the ambassador at the time to Vietnam. And that assassination was something that was told to him just before his Chicago trip, if you look into it. You'll find that he wasn't connected to that, first of all. Second of all, I would have to say that this is one of the wildest sort of less founded presentations I've ever heard, and I don't understand how it is this guy's saying a lot of these things.
Well, let's get him to react to that again, and then the interview.
Well,
is not
I
over
think
yet.
I think the stories that the mafia was playing to hit him before the assassination of DM, I think they're all made up. There's no proof. It's all speculation. There's no documentation that they were going to hit him in Chicago. It's just somebody saying something to somebody else, or the Godfathers, or Traficante said something to somebody. It's like meaningless. It's rumors. There's no proof of any of this stuff. I think that's all made up just to cover her. I can't believe anything they say in these assassination books at all. And my documentation comes from the New York Times, by the way. I'm quoting from you from the Times itself. It's better than any other stuff they have out there. I'm quoting articles. By the way, this last article, let me just show you what she did, this woman. The last article in the New York Times in November came out on the 25th, the day before, the 24th, 2 days after Kennedy died. He wasn't even in the ground yet. Oswald was assassinated that day in the police station, and she sends a condolence message to Mrs. Kennedy, a sarcastic message. But in this message, she boasts about what happened, like she's responsible. Let me read the sentence that she had in here.
All right.
I'll show you what she said. Indeed, such a murder, where even the wounds inflicted on President Kennedy were identical to those of President Ngo Dinh Diem and my husband, and coming only 20 days after the Vietnamese tragedy. How did she know Kennedy was shot in the head 2 days after his assassination? How did she get that information? There's only one way.
Well, I'm not sure that was public at the time, was it?
Of course. Even today they debate the issue. Even today they don't even know. You see these shows and everything. How did she know? She ordered it. And the assassins came back to her afterwards, telling her, everything's taken care of. We did it.
Now pay
to make
us
that statement like that, identical wounds. And how come these shows don't talk about that? They keep talking about the wounds and everything. How come they don't compare the wounds with DM or New? None of them touch that subject. Why not? She said they're identical. They don't touch. Why don't they touch it?
Well, and was she not, as you mentioned, but let's bring this up again, did not the Warren Commission conclude that she was a suspect?
That's correct.
And they kept it quiet, didn't they?
For 30 years, it was kept quiet, and it was only accidentally released in 1993. Even after that, the assassination books never picked up on it. They ignored it. It's right there, and they refused to publish it because they're under orders not to publish. She had to be protected. She had to be crushed. History, obliterated from history. They didn't want anybody to know about her anymore. Yes, she was a suspect. You want to get into the thing with Lee Harvey Oswald?
Yeah, let's do that, and then we'll wrap up the hour with,
okay,
with phone
now,
calls for you.
I looked a lot over these books, 3,500 books. I try to read as many as I can. I try to figure out what really happened to this guy. And I came across the report of the Attorney General of the state of Texas. His name was Wagoner Carr, C-A-R-R. I don't know if you ever heard of his name before, but anyway, let me explain what happened. Okay. When Kennedy was killed, he ordered his investigators to go to Oswald's house and clean out all his documents. He wanted to get there before the FBI got there. He didn't trust the FBI. He cleaned out the documents. He says later, we had the entire file of the FBI. He was employed as an agent of the FBI. He had documents, pay vouchers, what months he worked for the FBI. It was all in there.
Amazing.
This is what he said. This is the Attorney General of the state of Texas talking now. So I have to accept what he's saying now. You know, you have to go somewhere, you know, believe somebody.
Oh, yeah, you have to believe somebody.
Now, I traced this later on, and I said, well, what happened to this file? He says he gave it over to the Warren Commission. The Warren Commission never acknowledged they got this file.
Never did.
That, from the FBI. But former, you know, President Ford was on the Warren Commission, and he wrote a book about it a year later called The Portrait of an Assassin. And you have to laugh at some of the things he said in there. They discussed this problem with Oswald being an FBI agent, but they don't use that word. They say there's a rumor that he was a government agent. That's what they say. This is what Ford is writing down in his book. And they say this is a terrible situation, you know, if this is true, you know, American government's in big trouble, that one of our, the guy killed him was an FBI agent or any agent of the American government. So they start talking among themselves, debating, what could we do about this? How do we solve this problem? So one of the people, I think Chief Justice Earl Warren, says, well, have Hoover say he never worked for the FBI. And another guy says, but that people are not going to believe that. But that's exactly what happened. Hoover did say that, and they dropped it at that. Now, J. Lee Rankin, R-A-N-K-I-N, was the attorney for the commission. He ran the whole thing. He set it up. He wrote the summary and everything. And he said, after listening to this debate going on about Oswald being an agent, government agent, he said, look, this commission has only one goal, to prove that Oswald was not a government agent, period. Not that he was innocent or guilty, whatever. That's the only goal we have in this to produce. And that's what went on for the rest of the time, trying to prove he was not a government agent. They had one piece of evidence they couldn't hush up. He was in the FBI building a week before the assassin. He wanted to see one of the agents there. He wasn't there, and he gave a letter to be given to that agent. Later, after the assassination, that agent said he didn't read the letter. He ripped it up and destroyed it. That they admitted, that he was. You might have heard that. He wasn't the FBI.
I wonder what that letter said.
Probably wanted a pay increase.
Yeah.
No, I'm serious. He was only getting $200 a week. A month, $200 a month. Of course, today's money is like $2,000 and everything.
Right.
My guess is he wanted more benefits. He had a family to support.
He wanted more.
He wanted more. And he was sacrificed. As we know, of course, the Dallas police was totally corrupted. For 2 days, they interviewed him. They never had tapes. They never wrote down what he said. You know, it's a mystery what happened, what he was talking to him.
Has anybody else concluded the same thing you've concluded about Madam New?
Nobody.
You're out there all by yourself.
Matter of fact, if you go look at Amazon.com, Madam New, read down. The only books on her is about the Vietnam thing. No, they will not publish them.
All right, well,
no.
Stay with us.
Oh,
we're going to come back, and we're going to take some phone calls, final calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, we're going to take some final phone calls with Michael Cohen here in his theory before next hour. We bring in a special theory on Destiny Betrayed, so get ready for that. Hey, you have an opportunity to sound off. That's right. Coast to Coast listeners can sound off about things that they feel and deem important. Simply write your editorial to editorial@coasttocoastam.com. Include your phone number. Producer Tom will look it over, get back to you, and maybe record you just like this.
Hi, this is Susan from Canada. This is my sound off. Thousands of scientists have been studying the universe for over 50 years with all kinds of high-end satellite technical equipment. And you mean to tell me that they only knew now how to discover planets in front of stars? What a load of malarkey. You can't honestly believe it has only been recently that they've discovered this. I would more likely believe this was discovered in the 1960s. It really doesn't take a genius to think of this kind of strategy or equipment to find planets. Wow, they really must think we're stupid. I think they put TV in front of the populace to keep us sleeping. How evident. Well, the sleeping giant's awake. People need to start asking questions and stop the insanity. This is Susan from Canada, and this has been my sound off.
And welcome back to Coast, we're with Michael Cohen. Let's go to the phones. Patrick in Louisiana. Hey, Patrick, go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Mr. Cohen.
How you doing?
George, my question is, as Mr. Cohen, you're researching all this, how do you coordinate, how do you lay all these possible facts that you say are facts in line with what other conspirators say, and not just that, but with timelines? I mean, 20 days is a pretty short amount of time to get a hold of somebody like Richard Nixon and the Pope. And gee, I sure hope we have a taxi already set up and a job in a school book depository so that we can use this as an assassination. And I'm glad, George, your first caller was somebody who said he believed that Oswald was an absolute, you know, patsy and out of it, because the more research I do, and the more time that I spend with it, I tend to believe that Oswald at least made the decision to act by himself. You know, I certainly, after hearing this, I have a hard time believing somebody who was an FBI agent would then shoot a Dallas policeman, you know, would be in perfect coordination for something like this to happen. was such a little bit of time to be put in.
What about the time, Michael? You're breaking up a little bit here, Patrick. What the time span was fast, wasn't it?
Well, 20 days, yes. That's why it's one of the most incredible things that happened in American history. A massive conspiracy like this set up so quickly, so accurately, and everything worked right to the end. I find it interesting. I go to these websites where they have Kennedy assassination debates and things that go on with this. And all these websites, they admit that she was involved in the assassination. They don't deny it, but they put her down as a woman. They said she could not have done this in 20 days. They say that, but they don't give any reasons. You see, I did the research on this. I could see what happened. Her connection to Richard Nixon opens up the whole thing immediately. That's the way she pulled it off. He was the conduit. That's what was missing in all the other books. You understand?
Yeah, and it is missing in all the other books.
Well, they were not, because they cannot quote, and these writers are not allowed to quote Madam New and what happened with Richard Nixon. She's off limits. It's banned. Let me tell you how bad it is with the censorship in books, all right? If you go to the public library, which I did, and you look at History of the Vietnam War, 1,000 books on the subject, pull a few off the shelves. Her name appears in every single book because she was there at the early stages of the war. But what they've done is they censored those books because they all end on November 1st. It says November 1st, New is assassinated, Diem's assassinated, and she's out of power. None of them go on to the next day and says that she blames President Kennedy for the deaths and she was going to get President Kennedy. They stop right there. Every single book stops at November 1st. They will not go to November 2nd. That's how complete the censorship is with her, how they can censor 1,000 history books like that.
Let's go to Chicago. Lisa's with us. Hi, Lisa. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Hi. How are you? I'm so excited to be talking to you. Happy Thanksgiving to you. I've been listening to you for a million years, and I'm just so excited to be talking to you because I'm a teacher and I'm up every morning at 5:40 in the morning. But I wanted to ask you about Jack Ruby. Do you think he was involved at all with the Chicago Mafia in the assassination
Kennedy? That's a good question, Michael.
I was going to speak about the role of the Jews and Israel in the assassination. It was took enough time, but I could give a whole thing about that. He was a dual agent. He was a mafioso. There's no doubt about it. He was in charge of the strip club, the Carousel Club in Dallas. His job was to get control of the police officers by bribing them with liquor and prostitutes and everything. He was mafia, but he was Jewish, too. And he also was involved with Israel. And there is speculation out there that the Jews were involved in this assassination. There's a website. If you look at Kennedy assassination Israel, you could pull up a lot of interesting articles. I don't know how true they are. You know, some of the things they say are pretty frightening. But the two most important people who cleaned up this mess afterwards were Jews. You had Ruby, who was Jewish, who assassinated Oswald, and then you had former Senator Arlen Specter involved in the Warren Commission. And Specter came up with the magic bullet theory. Remember that whole business with that, with the pristine bullet? In other words, they had to prove that Oswald only fired 3 shots, but the wounds indicated a lot more than several bullets hit these people. So Specter had to come up with a crazy story that one bullet went through Kennedy, then moved left, right, up and down, backwards, forwards, then it went into Connolly, went in different directions, came out and was pristine. So you have two Jews who are key in covering up this. I'm not happy about this. I'm Jewish. I'm not happy about this. At these two people, now they go more involved in some of these websites. They're saying they're working for the Mossad, these people. They were on the orders of the Israeli government to do this. And the reason was that the Israeli government was angry because Kennedy was trying to shut down a nuclear reactor they built in the desert there, producing nuclear weapons. Kennedy was very angry at the Israelis with this business.
But you don't believe that part of the theory, do you?
That part, I'm just telling you what they say. There is truth that before he died, he had a big problem with Israel and nuclear weapons. That's a fact. That this nuclear reactor, what happened was Kennedy was sending American inspectors over there to see what was going on with the reactor, and the Israelis wouldn't let him into the reactor.
You mean like we're trying to do with Iran right now?
Right, right. So he wrote a threatening letter to the Israeli prime minister about it. I read the letter there saying, you better let those people in, and we want them in every 6 months to go into that reactor. You have to see the whole reactor, not part of it. So there was a conflict going on between Kennedy and him, but what these assassination people talk about, as writers say on the site, is They didn't play the major role. They were minor role. The Mossad played a minor role. And these two characters, Ruby and Spectre, were the cleanup squad. That was their job. They weren't the assassins. You see? That's the way I look at Ruby.
Well, I'll always believe Ruby was sent to muffle Oswald or do something.
No doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. He was sent to do it, and he had no problem doing it because he controlled the Dallas Police Department. They were all corrupted from his club.
And
you notice what happened, how he walked up to Oswald, the police all moved away. Remember the pictures of that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was like they knew it. Here he comes.
Here he comes with his gun in his hand, and they made a corridor for him so he could get to Oswald and shoot him to death, you know? So, of course, it was all corrupted, the business. Mark Lane's book, Rush to Judgment, which I consider to be the only decent book out there on the Kennedy assassination, Mark Lane was the lawyer who represented Oswald's wife at the hearings, the Warren Commission hearings. And he wrote this book, Rush to Judgment, and he attacked the Warren Commission from a legal point of view. And he showed how they lied again and again and again, you know, and everything they claimed. And one of the things they lied about was Ruby's position there. They tried to say he wasn't mafia. They tried to say he had an innocent strip club. That's all he was doing there. And they said, oh, he only entertained 10 policemen there. And their evidence was hundreds of policemen would go into that club to get free liquor, to get prostitutes. And when Lane shows how they were lying on the Warren Commission, trying to play it down, this guy was not a mafia or godfather there.
Was Madame Yu hated in Vietnam by her own people?
By the Buddhists?
By the Buddhists.
Oh, yeah, 90% of the population hate. Oh, sure, they hated her. Oh, yeah. She killed them. She tortured them.
When did she flee Vietnam to live elsewhere?
Okay, it was beginning of October 1963. This is where she began the tour of America. And she was here when the assassination of her husband.
So she never went back?
Never went back in her life. She would actually, if you look at it from the point of view, she was like an orphan here. She was isolated. Her husband was just killed. She could never go back home. She stuck here. And by the way, there's a video of her. If you look at that video, I told you about, there's several videos where she's at the airport in Los Angeles, and the reporters give her the bad news about the coup. And she's sitting there with her daughter and the sunglasses, and she said the gates of hell have opened up, and that Kennedy was responsible, carrying on there and threatening. And then a reporter says, would you want to live here in America? And he says, are you out of your mind to live in this country like this? Or she announced it. And then later on, she did the big news conference I told you about. But there's a video of her being told about this, what would happen there.
Where did she end up? Where was she when she died? In the United States?
I believe it was in Rome. It was in Rome. She lived in Rome and France, mostly in Rome. She was Catholic. She was involved with the church, very heavily involved. She knew the Pope. She was involved with all these people there, you know, and very religious woman, very religious. But as her father said, she was insane, you know, a Buddhist, you know, killing Buddhists. You know, it's like a Jew working for Hitler or something, you know, the same type of analogy with her.
Michael, one of the most tumultuous times in the history of this country.
No doubt about it. We never recovered from that.
No,
we never recovered from it.
Let's go to Clint, Anchorage, Alaska. You're on with us. Go ahead, Clint.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call, and I wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving out there.
Thank you.
Michael, I have a question about Ted or Kennedy's dad. Didn't it start back in...
Joseph.
And he ran for president?
The father, Kennedy's father?
Yes.
No, he didn't run because he was corrupted and everything. He never did that. He wasn't. He had too many problems, so he never ran for the presidency. He groomed his sons to run. His older brother Jack, who died in the war, and then John, you know, and then the others. They were groomed. He could never run. He might have wanted to, but he couldn't.
Did he try to get involved? Involved in politics, though, wasn't he, Michael?
He was involved, but he was corrupt with the mafia, with the Irish mafia, with the with the bootlegging and all that nonsense, you know.
That's where he made his money, right?
Oh, yeah, that's where the money was made. Of course, the family money was based on that. I think the family still is involved with the whiskey imports or something. They have a concession on that with the liquor. But he never got that. No, he could never. I know they said he talked about it, but he had too much on it, too many bad things going for him. So he realized he had to groom his sons to do that, you know, to take over. One thing I want to say in that book, The Tears of Autumn, McCary does say he quotes the Vietnamese saying, "We killed Kennedy, but we have to kill one more Kennedy brother to make it even, because Diem and Nu were killed." He actually said, that's what the Vietnamese were telling him. "We got to kill one more," and you know who the other one was?
It was Robert.
That's right.
When did that book come out, Tears of Autumn?
Mid-70s, around 75, 76. I heard him on radio talking about it, and he said, "Well, don't believe what I have in the book. It's all fiction," he says. You know?
Yeah.
So I said, "Well, it's all, the only book out of thousands that is fiction has to be true, because the other books are all fiction."
Let's go to Bruce, Louisville, Kentucky. Hey, Bruce, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call, gentlemen. Very interesting show tonight. I have a question. I had heard rumors that Jacqueline Kennedy, after her death, that there was an envelope she left that was sealed and was not to be opened until 25 years after the death of her children. Have you ever come across anything like that?
I heard some speculation, nothing definite. There were tapes she had, though, where she said about the assassination. She made some remarks about some tapes afterwards. I didn't hear the tapes where she said it was a program, there was a conspiracy or something like that. I think what happened was this with Jackie Kennedy. It's my opinion. The church made her shut up about the whole thing. They made her quiet about it because, see, when Kennedy had Diem killed and Nu killed, they were very important people in the Catholic Church. And to the church, that's a terrible thing that happened, that Kennedy was involved in those assassinations. And I think they had a talk with her about it. And they said, "Look, you got to keep your mouth shut. Your husband did a terrible thing by killing those two, you know, and he was killed, but that's vengeance. That's the way it works." That's what I think happened, and that's why she never talked about the assassination or everything else that went on. That's only my opinion about it. Somebody got to her and shut her up, and I think it was the church that did it.
Why did Johnson escalate the war after he became president?
Well, you understand, the war, Johnson called it a limited war. What's a limited war? We weren't going to win the war. We weren't able to do what was necessary to win. What was necessary to win? Well, you had to cut off the supplies from China and Russia. You had to attack the Russian ships bringing supplies in constantly. We couldn't do that. So we were fighting the war with our hands behind our backs, trying to win something when the supplies and the weapons and the manpower kept coming in and we were being overwhelmed. China admitted years afterwards they had 300,000 soldiers fighting in that war. We didn't know that at the time. They boasted about that, that they were involved. We didn't know we were fighting Chinese soldiers. We couldn't tell the difference who were fighting on that. So we were overwhelmed. We couldn't bomb the necessary targets. We couldn't stop the port of Haiphong and stop the ships from coming in. It was a losing cause. We our hands were tied. We couldn't attack this thing or couldn't attack that. It wasn't like World War II where we won that war. We couldn't do a lot of things. That's the reason we lost it. And we weren't designed to win the war.
No,
war is not a real war.
No, we did not give our troops the backing we needed to win that war. And
that's
we should
right.
have been.
But that was designed for that. It was deliberately done like that.
We should never have been there in the first place. You know?
Sure, of course, we agree. But we got pulled into it. Kennedy pulled us into that. He's the one that set up this whole mess.
Eisenhower was there first, right?
Okay, let me tell you what happened. Kennedy was running for president in 1960, and he had a big problem because the Protestants hated him, being a Catholic. And they said, if you become president, you'll take orders from the Pope. So he had a big, he had an audience of Protestant ministers, and he started telling them, look, I will not take orders from the Pope. I'll be an independent person. So everybody, they believed him. They voted for him. But Kennedy was lying at the time, because as soon as he got into office, the Vatican told him, you got to send troops to Vietnam because that Catholic government's in trouble. He took orders all the way for the next 3 years until he had the fights with Nu and the whole business with them, and he broke with the Vatican. But he was under the control of the Vatican. The person in charge was Cardinal Spellman, S-P-E-L-L-M-A-N. He was the cardinal from New York. He was giving advice to all these presidents from Eisenhower all the way on up about the war. He was taking orders from the Vatican. Now, nobody wants to talk about this in the history book. So they say, oh, he never took orders from the Vatican. That's not true. He was taking orders to save the Catholic government there in South Vietnam. And he was the one that escalated this business and got us involved in this. By the time he died, it was too late. We had 30,000 soldiers fighting and dying every day. It was too late to do anything.
Let's go to Alex, Los Angeles, California. Hey, Alex, go ahead.
Hi, George. How are you? Thank you very much for taking my call, and have a happy Thanksgiving.
You too, Alex. Only got about a minute, so go ahead.
Okay. I'm the writer of a play called The Magic Bullet Theory, which my co-writer and I predicated on the theory that the powers that be set up the hit on the president to miss him, not hit him, and it went completely awry. And I was kind of wondering if that could fall into the pantheon of other kind of theories that would be out there.
Well, what do you mean they wanted to miss him? I mean, they had assassins there trying to miss him? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, the idea was to set it up to make it look like it was an assassination hit. They miss him, everybody else is expendable, and then they can give him evidence that Castro ordered the hit, and they could get Cuba back.
Did you read this in one of these assassination books? Did you get this from one?
No. Actually, I blame myself for this one.
All right. You see, uh-huh. they make up a lot of things about this business. When you have an assassin assigned to target, you know, they're not going to play games. No, they were out to kill him.
There's no doubt.
Really does not hold any water.
And as you know, Michael, there are probably more people there, grassy knoll, everything else. Michael, thanks. Thank you for the theory. And we've got more coming. So stick with us. We'll continue in a moment. Destiny Betrayed, James DiEugenio is next with us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to our John F. Kennedy assassination special and still another theory, Destiny Betrayed. And we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. 20 years ago, James DiEugenio wrote Destiny Betrayed. And now he has updated it, and we'll bring him on the show now. James, how are you?
Good evening, George.
Good to have you with us. So you updated Destiny Betrayed. Tell me why.
Well, I really wouldn't use the word updated. I would say it's been more or less 90% rewritten. Okay, and
that's pretty complete then. Okay.
Yeah. It's essentially, for all intents and purposes, it's another book. Why did I do it? Because I had learned so much more about this case and about the presidency of John F. Kennedy, and particularly using the declassified files of the Assassinations Record and Review Board, especially how they applied to the investigation of Jim Garrison. I just felt that, you know, the book I wrote today is pretty much a night and day version because, maybe I should tell your listeners if they don't know. The ARB is the Assassination Record and Review Board that was set up in 1994 after Oliver Stone's film JFK created such a swirl of controversy about all the files that had not yet been declassified on the John F. Kennedy case.
Okay.
So therefore, a five-person board went to work with a staff of about 25 people, and they went to work for about 4 years trying to declassify as many of these files as they could. And they came up with about 2 million pages, right, and added to the previous 2 million pages. This creates about 4 million pages on the John F. Kennedy case in National Archives. They actually had to create a whole different location to accommodate all these new files. So a lot of these, a surprising amount, were on the Jim Garrison case. And so since that was the focus of the first version of the book, I went ahead and took a look at this stuff. And I decided, well, this warrants a new look because we know so much more about really what really happened to Garrison as a result of this. And combined with the stuff I had learned about the John F. Kennedy case, plus rather the presidency of Kennedy, plus Lee Harvey Oswald, I decided that, you know, the time was ripe for completely redoing the book. And so that's essentially why I did it.
Over the years, you probably have heard as many theories as I have, James, about the Kennedy assassination. Why are there so many? I mean, I just had one right before you came on. It's almost as if every researcher has their own view over what happened.
Well, you know, George, my book doesn't deal with theories, okay? I have over 2,000 footnotes in the book.
Yeah, I know.
Right?
It's very comprehensive.
And almost all of this that in my book is absolutely verifiable. And the way I feel about this case today is if you don't base a large part of your book on these new files, then it essentially is a theory, okay? So that's something that I really did try and avoid, okay? So, you know, in this particular case, because most of these secret files were stowed away for so many years, mm-hmm. because they didn't start being declassified till 1994. For about 30 years, you had stuff that really wasn't based on anything, you know? And it was essentially based upon, well, let's take a look. You had the Warren Commission report in the 26 volumes. You had the Church Committee report, all right, which really wasn't all that long. It was only about 60 or 70 pages. And you had the volumes of the House Select Committee on Assassinations. Now, what's wrong with this picture? Well, for instance, the House Select Committee report on assassinations, we know now, was essentially a censored piece of work because the best stuff the House Select Committee did, Robert Blakey, who was the chief counsel of that body, you know, classified most of the great stuff. For example, the Mexico City report, done by Eddie Lopez and Dan Hardway, which is an incredible piece of work, you know. So that's just one instance. About the Warren report, I think we can say today with pretty much authority, you know, that report is pretty much, in its all of its conclusions, is useless. There is some good information, you know, but most of the stuff in the Warren Commission report that was of any value was also not declassified until years later.
Right.
So in one way, I guess you can say the import of the JFK case is how much the government had to keep secret and therefore allowed these theories, I mean, there must be a dozen of them, okay, to run rampant in the meantime. You know, and I really do believe, George, you know, between me, you, and your audience, you know, that was their intent. See, in the book, in my book, after Garrison, after the subterfuge of Garrison and the CIA's effort to make sure that Clay Shaw would be acquitted, after that succeeded, all right, what happened was that there was a document, well, not really a document, a manuscript that was published. Okay, right after Garrison's case failed, all right, this was called the Torbett document. The proper title is Nomenclature of an Assassination Cabal. You know, it's very mysterious where this thing came from. Right, supposedly, two FBI guys or Secret Service guys visited a lawyer in Texas, and he put together this essay, this rather long essay, mm-hmm. in which everybody and your Aunt Mary is involved in the assassination of President Kennedy.
Oh, God. Everyone's
and I'm exaggerating only slightly. I mean, you name it, NASA, the Defense Intelligence Security Command, okay, the FBI, military intelligence, the mafia, everything is in there, in this giant Rube Goldberg contraption, okay? Everybody except one exception, Garrison's prime suspect, the CIA. Okay? And I think that was notable by its absence. I think that this, in my book, I actually write that in my belief, this was a deliberate misdirection play by the powers that be to essentially make the research community get lost in the woods with all these different crazy theories. And this, of course, was a harbinger of what was to come, because now you were going to get all these, my God, dozens of theories about who and why Kennedy was killed. All right? And I didn't listen to your previous speaker, okay? Was this supposed to be Madame New killed Kennedy?
Yes, that was his theory.
I don't understand that at all. I can't really comment on it. You know, was the idea that somehow Kennedy was responsible for the death of Diem and his brother?
Yeah, exactly. She was ticked
off. That's not true. That's based on, you know, I could talk about that subject for a long time.
I had always heard, James, that Kennedy was upset that Diem was assassinated, and felt that the CIA was running rogue on him.
Yes, and that if you take a look at Jim Douglas's book, JFK and the Unspeakable, he has the best rendition of what actually happened to Diem and his brother. Okay, it was not. In fact, Kennedy actually. Let me try and get rid of this in a very brief nutshell. See, there was a part of Kennedy's cabinet that did want to get rid of Diem and his brother. They waited for precisely the right weekend when almost everybody was out of town,
to do it.
Including JFK, you know, to send this cable, okay, over to Saigon, all right? And they misled Kennedy about who would approve the cable, all right? Now, this Henry Cabot Lodge had just gone over to Saigon. And by the way, Lodge was not Kennedy's choice to be the ambassador. Okay, he wanted to appoint a guy named Edmund Gillian, who would have done a much better job than Lodge. But Dean Rusk vetoed that choice, the Secretary of State. Lodge was part of the conspiracy to go ahead and get the cable and go ahead and enact the cable and show it to the military guys who wanted to overthrow Diem.
What is the cable?
It was essentially, if Diem does not change his ways, okay, then it's time to go ahead and encourage a new government.
Okay.
That was essentially what the cable said, okay? But what happened is that Lodge did not do the first thing in the cable, which was he was supposed to show it to Diem. He never showed it to Diem. Okay, he went right to the military guys, all right? So when Kennedy gets back, all right, and he sees what has happened, he's furious. He's basically, you know, saying, you know, this kind of crap has got to stop. You know, one of the guys who was involved in the plot to get the cable over there, Mike Forrestal, volunteered to resign. And Kennedy said, you know, you're not worth firing. You guys owe me something now. So Kennedy then tried to cancel the cable. And there's actually an interview with Lodge on that PBS show, Vietnam, a television history, in which he says, you know, Kennedy sent a cancellation cable over. Well, the cancellation didn't work because it had all, you know, once you start something like this, it's almost impossible to stop it unless you go there yourself and do it. And with Lodge and Conine on, you know, over there in Saigon, they secretly encouraged the coup. All right? Okay, but they even went beyond that. Conine, by cooperating with the guys who wanted to take over, ensured that Diem would not be allowed safe exit out of the country, because Diem made a dumb mistake and stayed in contact with Lodge as he was trying to escape, not knowing that Lodge and Conine were in cahoots with these military guys. So therefore, wherever Diem went, he would call Lodge. Lodge would tell Conine where he was, and these military guys would then follow him, all right? So that's what happened, okay? And that's what ended up with the death of Diem. It wasn't on Kennedy. It was between Lodge and Conine, All right, and Kennedy was very upset when he heard about this. All right, and he actually called Lodge back to Washington for the express purpose of firing him. And right before this,
okay, ladies and gentlemen, we come to the end of this broadcast tonight, and I think what I'm gonna have to do is I'm gonna have to reschedule this for the appointed date that it was supposed to air on the 26th before my guest did not come in this evening. So tomorrow night we're going to have federal and civil procedures, so make sure you tune in for that. And then we're going into trust law, and then we'll come back with a reschedule of a continuation of this broadcast. So don't forget to tune in so we can finish this thing up and get it over and behind us. I hope you all have gotten something out of this broadcast, and don't forget about the Morris Summit that's going to happen January 12th here, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I've been your host, Tarakamana L. Bay, and until next time.